You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Culture, current events, Catholic things. We discuss those for 50 minutes every day. Thank you for listening. Well, it looks like we've got the travel ban 2.0, which the ACLU is basically saying, okay, it's still a Muslim ban, so what are we supposed to do with this? We'll see you in court, they say, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about religious liberty and why religious liberty is amazingly important. Religious liberty, not just Christian liberty, but religious liberty. We'll talk about that. Also, now, as the dust has settled and it seems to be many challenges, perhaps, or questions, I would say questions regarding the validity of certain issues within the Trump administration. The question is, finally admit it's all about sexism when it comes to Hillary Clinton. Now, not the case for me, but I want to talk about sexism, and I want to talk about that because I think there might be something to this argument. We'll get into that. And also, not that we want to spend a lot of time on talking about music we can't play, but I am totally, and when I say that we don't have the rights to play the music, right? You got to have rights. But it's posted on my Facebook page, totally obsessed with the new Lord single. I think it's an amazing song. I don't know how long it's going to last for me, but I'm in love with it. All of that and more will be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that 50 minutes every afternoon. Proud of my bishop in Lexington, Kentucky, who issued these yard signs, apparently from the diocese, and they basically are in three languages, Spanish, Arabic, and English, and it says, no matter where you are from, we're glad you're our neighbor. I think that's a powerful message, one that ideally we can embrace, one that as Catholics we should certainly understand is hinged upon the very nature of being Catholic. Because as Catholics, there's something interesting about our name, and we know this, but I think we forget it. I think it's just easy to kind of conveniently forget that our very label of Catholic means universal, right? Universal. The fact that we are Catholic, we are named Catholic, we could easily be called the Universal Church, and it would mean the exact same thing. One holy Universal Church, meaning globally within the entire world, and quite frankly, throughout the universe, because that's how we see ourselves. We see ourselves as being not just American, not just Roman, right? You hear that often, the Roman Catholic Church. I hear criticisms of the Roman Catholic Church, but This is a universal church. This is one that says we have to, first and foremost, realize that our religion, our faith is comprised of every possible dynamic on the globe, right? That this is the entire shebang, if you will. There's not a race or culture nationality that is not a part of our universal family. We have to understand that. I don't know, honestly. I don't know that we understand that. And unless you've traveled internationally, and most especially unless you have been at a mass with 1.5 million people or 2 million people at a World Youth Day and actually seen the universality, I mean, that's what I praise God for. I mean, the fact that I've had those opportunities, I certainly want my children to have those opportunities to be able to see the world in that representation that said, we are here. We are the world, right? As the old song would say. And we're here celebrating the same Mass together, receiving the same Eucharist together, here with the same Holy Father, the Vicar of Christ on earth. And that, if that doesn't change your perspective, nothing will. If you're in a perspective of thinking that there's some sort of American Catholic Church and then a African Catholic Church. No, there may be some colloquialisms that come out in the liturgies, absolutely. But it's not a different Mass. It's not a different church, not a different worship. It's exactly the same wherever you go, and it's amazing to experience that. So with that said, Catholics, who really are universal, need to understand that we didn't come to this country with any sort of ease, necessarily. I mean, you go back to look at the Jamestown settlement, look at the St. Augustine, as it's called in Florida, not St. Augustine, St. Augustine, Florida. You look at the fact that there were Catholics here before anybody else other than the Native Americans, right? So when Ponce de Leon came into the shores of Florida looking for the Fountain of Youth, he brought his Catholicism with him, right? When Cortez came to the New World, you could argue what that ultimately resulted in, but Catholicism was here. But the colonies were Church of England colonies, right? They were colonized along with the faith of the Great Britain, which was the Church of England, because we had gone through the Reformation at this point, and we were here with a certain flavor of religion which was not friendly to Catholicism. And then if you consider the puritanical of the earlier settlers, when you look at those that arrived at Plymouth Rock and the things that they brought with them. So, again, not a very open expression of faith. So when Catholics came here, we were not embraced with loving arms to say, oh, yeah, we want more of you guys. And there were even laws passed against Catholics. And we had a heck of a time in the early beginnings of this culture because of who we were as Catholics and because we were seen as one to be distrusted. This continued even to the Kennedy administration, where it was assumed with fear that Rome would be running the presidency if a Catholic were to get into office. This, we still have the leftovers of this. So if anyone needs to be on the forefront of protecting religious liberty, it needs to be Catholics. And it can't just be Christian liberty. And we hear that a lot. Well, Christians are persecuted, so we got to do something about it. Well, you know, if people are persecuted, we need to do something about it. And regardless of why they're being persecuted, are people being persecuted because of their sexual orientation? We need to do something about that. We need to step into that. Because human dignity is compromised. You say, well, Leo, they're gay, they're homosexual, that compromises human dignity. Listen, Catechism's clear. If we've got any sort of discrimination against individuals, that's a problem. That is an affront to human dignity, and that's something we have to stand up for. So that does not fly. It's not going to fly with me, and it doesn't fly with the church. Now, you may find some who are extreme enough in their positions to agree with whatever you think that's all about, but that's not the way it works. It's not the way it works, not the way human dignity is protected. So regardless of what it is, we have to do that. But especially, I'm going to say especially if we're talking about religious persecution. Why? First off, our country was founded on that freedom, right? Not founded because of that freedom, which is something that people get twisted all the time. It's like we have no concept of history. We don't understand the difference between the Plymouth Rock Puritans who did come to escape the Church of England and then the underpinnings of our country, which basically were Church of England underpinnings, with plurality, of course, and this is why Thomas Jefferson pens his letter to the Danbury Baptist Church to say, hey, you guys, we're going to make sure there's a clear separation of church and state. Why? Because they didn't want the Church of England. But it wasn't, that was after the founding of the country. It was not, the country was not founded. Please don't get this confused. I hear it all the time. On religious liberty. It wasn't. This country and the Constitution was founded on liberty, yes, and justice for all. Now, we didn't know what for all was at the time because we still had slaves and we still were a male-dominated society with undoubted challenges when it came to women having rights. We know this. So we had minorities and we had slaves and we had foreigners and we had women that were still not in the full embrace of this liberty. But I do believe we did found a country. I do believe we did find a way to construct a constitution of this country that was at least on its way to liberty. It was birthing liberty. I think that we know that. We're still not there. And we're certainly not there. We are certainly not there if we do something that potentially is a violation of our Constitution, which would be to say these of this religion cannot practice here, cannot come here, cannot be a part of this culture. Now we've flown in the face of that liberty that the Constitution protects. And we have to understand that. And we have to be prepared to stand up for those that we may not agree with simply on principle. It's okay not to agree with another one's faith, but to protect that faith and to want that faith to flourish. That's completely okay. We get in these bizarre us against them attitudes and we think that Islam is our enemy and we think that there's some kind of holy jihad war. That's not happening. That's some sort of made-up fairy tale of weirdness that is not even remotely true. Are there extremists? Yes. Are there radicals? Yes. Are they limited to Islam? No. No. Those extremists, those radicals, can be Christian too and do egregious things just like we've seen time and time again. With mass shootings, with simply degrading someone's dignity, it happens, and we got to realize that. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back in Leo Brown, Leo Brown. Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We discuss that for 50 minutes every day, digging into the topics, trying to see some sort of ethical perspective. I mean, please, right? Let's at least be ethical. Let's try, at least, to be on the up and up. Let's look at things from a perspective of saying, what does our faith inform us? How do we do this well? And we don't. I think we got to admit that. We don't do it well. Even those of us who try, we don't do it well. But at least let's try, right? Let's at least try. That's what this is about. So, interesting story from the Huffington Post about, let's finally admit it was just sexism. Because I had this argument repeatedly. And I was accused of being everything but a liberal during the election cycle, which I finally come to say, look, I'm an independent. There are things that I know that I support that are as liberal as the day is long. I know that. But I also know there are things I support that are as conservative as the day is long, according to political constructs. I don't believe in political constructs. I don't support them. I believe in human dignity. I'm going to support that first and foremost. That spreads across the spectrums. You know this. We talk about this ad nauseum. But when you have, and this is what I argued in the election, when you have already inklings, which were there, very clearly there, of dishonesty, but your problem with the other candidate is her dishonesty, it's not about dishonesty anymore. You can't take that claim. So what is it? What is the real objection here? Well, it's the Clinton Foundation. Okay, well, but let's talk about that then. What do you mean by that? Because I've had those arguments, right? I've had those conversations. What exactly about the Clinton Foundation is the problem? Well, she was Secretary of State and she was blah, blah, blah. Is there proof of that? Because everything I've seen, and I'm no Senate Judiciary Committee member, I haven't dug enough into this personally, but I've got the reports that they provided, does not look like there was anything that was deemed unethical here. Believe me, there are other issues now that could be seen as ethical breaches so far in this administration and even in the election leading up to this that could be considered way more concern. They could be of way more ethical concern than what we saw in the Hillary Secretary of State tenure or in her election cycle. Well, what about Whitewater? Oh, my goodness, really? Right? What happened to Vince Foster? I mean, all this craziness comes up. And it's just insane because I kind of have to believe that there still is, in this day and age, a veiled sexism that says women can't do things men can do. Now, as I say that, and maybe I suffer from sexism as well. I don't know that there, and maybe there are. Maybe there are women who could play in the NFL. I don't know. I've never seen a 300-pound woman who would tackle another 300-pound guy. I'm not saying that can't exist. And maybe there are areas where there's still a needed separation. I mean, you look at the way women play basketball compared to the way men play basketball. It's not even the same game. That doesn't mean that there aren't amazing women basketball players playing other women who are very good. But I don't know that necessarily would, athletics, I have to question it. And maybe I'm old school. And maybe that's revealing some of my problem. Because I don't know that women can compete on that same level. I don't know. Maybe they can. Maybe we need to change the rules. If we need to change the rules, we need to change the rules. But all of that aside, when it comes to leadership positions, when it comes to decision-making, when it comes to actually guiding an organization, that skill set has less to do with gender and more to do with personality, right? Because we've all got a varying degrees of personality influence based on these factors that are there, whether we're introvert, extrovert, whether we're perceiving or feeling or you name it, right? These are the kind of things that the makeup of that personality is what really makes a person. And as a result of that, this is what makes someone fit for particular positions. Gender is not affected by that personality trait and by that personality mix. So to think that this could be an issue at all is a real concern. And I have to believe that there's something veiled there. I don't think it's an outright sort of, we're going to have a problem with this woman because she's a woman, but I still have to believe that there's something there that says, eh. Because it's still an issue. And the conversations I had generally kind of boiled down to just political rhetoric, right? As I've said many times, it's tribalism. You've got your tribe. You're going to support your tribe. You're going to stick with your tribe. You're not going to betray your tribe. And your tribe is that which you most believe, that this is the place that you've got to support regardless. To the point even that I discovered, and I think we've all seen this, that there's plenty of compromise that you're willing to make in order to support your tribe. But at least have just come out and admit that. You know what, Leo? I'm a Republican. I hate Democrats. I hate them. I hate the liberals. They're all idiots, and I would never vote for one. So I don't care if my Republican candidate is scum of the earth. It doesn't matter. He's better than a liberal. Then just say that, right? That type of honesty, that brutal honesty, I appreciate. And I what am I going to argue with that? No, how do you argue with that? You don't argue with that. You say, oh, okay. All right. Enjoy your tribalism. I mean, that's all you can do, right? I'm not going to try to convince someone. I might say something like, I kind of felt that way one time, but as an independent, I've discovered that there's a lot of things that I have to kind of believe that don't fit into political constructs. I may have that conversation, but it's going nowhere because it doesn't matter. Somebody's made up their mind and they've embraced that. But I think the real question we have to ask, aside from politics, is do we have still a problem subconsciously, maybe, that we're not even aware of with women in leadership? With when we see a powerful woman, or we see a woman who is rising in the ranks, or we see somebody running for office, is there something that we just kind of viscerally react to without even realizing it? Like, why is this woman here? What's this all about? Now, Kentucky boy, born and bred, and a lot of connections into Kentucky politics and the family ties that are. I have a cousin who was the first female lieutenant governor, and then the first female governor of Kentucky, Martha Lynn Collins. And we thought this was the dawning of a new era, right? Especially for those in this state who were Democrat, liberal leaning. They thought, we got a dawning of a new day, and there'll be other women stepping up and coming on through and making it happen. That was what, 30 years ago? At least, I don't know, 30 some odd years ago. We haven't had another female governor since. So it's very odd to think that to just assume that we've crossed some threshold, to just think that, we're mature enough. My goodness, this is 2017, right? We're mature enough to accept that. We get all of this. We see where it's going. But I have to question if there's real validity there or not, because I don't necessarily see that playing out. And especially when we forgive someone essentially for doing the same thing, questionable morals, questionable ethics, questionable facts, when it's not a big deal for someone, but that is what you hung your hat on with the opposition of someone else who just happens to be a woman, I think we got to stop, step back, and really ask some serious questions. I said repeatedly, my concerns with Hillary Clinton had nothing to do with her gender status, but the way she voted as a senator and the policies that she promoted through her election. This was something I could not agree with. At the same time, I couldn't agree with Trump, and that's why I voted third party, and I did what I did as an independent and voted for Evan McMullen, and so be it. But I promise you this, if I've got some sexism, and I'm not saying I don't, it had no bearing on my decision in that election. That I promise. And I'm sure I've got some kind of something there. I took the racism test recently. I think, yeah, I'm pretty open-minded. And I failed it, not badly, but just slightly enough to say, okay, you got something in there, right? Which we all do. We got to admit that. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, and Catholic things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. The new song from Lourdes, Greenlight, is what it's called. I don't know the name of the new album yet, but my goodness, wow. I was always impressed with her from the beginning, and not just because she's from Takapuna. Which is a little area that I have been to in New Zealand, right? I mean, she's a tiny little suburb there of Auckland, New Zealand. And not only her being a Kiwi is cool because I love New Zealanders. I fell in love with them when I was there. But her music's great, always has been. And this particular song just kind of firing on all the cylinders. Really amazing. Amazing song. Posted the video on my Facebook page. Can't play the song because we don't have the rights. You have to pay exorbitant fees for that stuff. We're not doing that, but we are talking about it. And you can post it on the Facebook page, I guess, because it's officially released on YouTube. And yeah, so, you know, check out my Facebook page. If you like Lord or you think you might, and you haven't heard this song yet, you must hear it. It's amazing. Video's great. Good stuff. Go Lord. Happy to see you doing well with a sophomore release at better than the freshman, which is rare, right? I've been in the music biz long enough and watched a lot of artists come out of the gate with just strong material. They can't back it up. They had 10 years to write the first album, a year, maybe two, to write the second while they're touring and all the things going on, and it just falls flat. They don't have it on a sophomore release. She does. Good stuff. So, back to the discussions that we've been having this afternoon, and certainly some of the things that we see happening now in the Trump administration. One of those is the repeal and replace, right? How many times have we heard that? We will repeal and replace Obamacare. Now, the one thing that I have disagreed with from the very get-go, and I still don't find this to be anything that even remotely makes sense, has been the mandate to purchase health care. Because if somebody simply wanted to pay out of pocket and they were okay with that because they didn't need health care, but yet they're going to be penalized for not having health care when they don't need health care, what kind of craziness is that? That just simply doesn't make sense. Or someone who has kind of teetered on the edge of could they potentially afford health care, or really could they be Medicaid recipients and they're getting penalized? That has been broken to me from the beginning, and I said it repeatedly that I expected the Supreme Court to make a decision saying, you know, this is unconstitutional. We cannot force a country to buy something. And this is where I was highly critical of Justice Roberts. Still feel the same. I haven't changed my tune on that. That he created language in this that had never been mentioned before. Nobody called this a tax. No one said that this is simply taxation for healthcare, because that language had just never been used. Penalties, some sort of fine, those have been used, right? Well, you got to buy healthcare. If you go and buy healthcare, you're going to get fined. Well, it's just a tax. This is what Justice Roberts entered into that discussion for the first time in that Supreme Court decision. Essentially saying, we could do this. We've been taxing since the beginning. Which, of course, is why the revolution was fought. Talked a little bit about history a moment ago when it comes to this country being founded on religious liberty. Not the case. Religious liberty, part of the founding of the country, yes, when it comes to the Constitution. And the Bill of Rights to the Constitution, but not why we founded this country. No, why we found this country was because taxation without representation. This was it. This was essentially it. The colonists were here. They were so far away from the mother country that they didn't even have representation in Parliament. And by the time things kind of got back and forth, it was a lot of time between those communications. They were still heavily reliant on the mother country for goods and services because there were no real means of manufacturing, no real means of production. Loyalists were split almost 50-50 in the colonies when it came to those who did not want revolution. But the revolution was clearly hinged on, wait a minute, we're getting reamed here. We're being forced into something that is not what we want. We have no representatives in Parliament. We're isolated. But at the same time, we're still getting taxed. Something needs to change about this dynamic. That's where it all started. That's what it was about. So we got to understand taxes, and certainly those that seem to be improperly placed, have always been an issue. So there's parts of this that I would 100% applaud. We don't need to force people to buy health care. That's crazy. Crazy. Don't need to do that. But do we need people to have health care? Yes. Yes. Right? Some disagree with that. I don't know. How do you disagree with that? How do you disagree with humans need a basic right to be taken care of medically? How do you disagree with that? And as Catholics, we've been talking about universal health care or some sort of safety precautionary program, especially for the most vulnerable, those who are either working poor or out of work or truly poor. They need to have a way to have health care. We need to ensure that. That's part of a just society, to say that those who are most vulnerable have something that is taking care of them. That's okay. And it's interesting when you look at the cycle of poverty. Generally speaking, 20% of the country is in poverty at any given time, but they normally don't stay there. Only a very small percentage stays there. the 20% below the poverty level normally don't live there at 20%. They may cycle in and out of Medicaid. They may find themselves in some particular need where that's a requirement. But generally speaking, they're going to come in and they're going to move on to gainful employment. That happens, especially now, because our unemployment is certainly low enough that there's 96% of the country in the workforce. So that would seem to suggest that at this point, the 20% are in some sort of cycle, which is, it's just true. It's just how the numbers work. But if we abandon that 20%, and if we totally abandon the 2% who are perpetually stuck there, then we got issues. Now, the big question is, and this is something we got to deal with, as we have an aging population, and I'm right on the hinge of the baby boomer, right? Didn't make baby boomer status, made Gen X status, but I'm an old Gen Xer, right? But as we age and as we enter the retirement pool, now what? Now what? Because we don't have a replacement rate over the next 30 years. And you think about that, there are those who enter retirement and live for 30 years. We don't have a replacement rate to say there's a workforce now and a tax base that really sustains this. We have no vision for that. And it's why I say responsible immigration is the absolute best solution. Because if we really are concerned about our future and we're not replacing ourselves naturally through birth, we got to find another way to do that. But this is me speaking. It's not statistics. It's not even my faith. But as long as we have old white guys in charge, they're not going to say, oh, yeah, we need young Hispanics to be the up-and-coming leaders. And we need young Middle Easterns to show up here. That's what we need. Let's open our doors to these individuals and bring them in because they're the ones who are actually reproducing. Old white guys aren't, just so you know. But I don't think that we have a big enough vision on this, and we're really not seeing some stuff. And I fear that our tribalism will get the best of us because we don't have a big enough picture vision to go, wow, let's look outside of our four walls. Let's look outside of our tiny community. Let's look outside of even our country and see what really makes sense. Let's find ways to address that. But this simple fact of a Catholic ethos is that people need to be taken care of. And if that means universal health care, we need to ensure that. We need to find a way to make that happen. That's all we have time for. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Thank you for listening. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.